Welcome to Dive Talking. I'm your host, David Zetland, and today is the 25th of January, 2019, and I'm here with Delton Chan. Delton is an Australian civil engineer who holds a PhD from the University of Queensland. Dr. Chan, Delton developed a new economic theory to explain why central banks should establish a global price for climate risk.
Primarily, the problem as I see it is that climate change is a systemic risk.
Right.
And we don't have a price for this risk in the economy or in the discussion of climate policies.
Okay.
The way I'd approach this topic is simply to say that we have the Paris Climate Agreement, which is a great political achievement that we could get the Paris Agreement in place. But if you pay attention to the details of that agreement, it really is about managing the risks of climate change. That's the primary focus and reason for trying to stay below 1.5 to 2 degrees of global warming. Mainstream economists are focusing only on one pricing instrument, which is a carbon tax or cap and trade or fee and dividend.
Okay.
Which is punitive.
Okay.
Effective.
Uh-huh.
What's very important about this reward, the global reward, is that technically it's not a subsidy.
Okay.
For the reason that when this reward is issued, it won't be paid from a government budget using euros or US dollars or Australian dollars. But we would use a new parallel currency for the whole world.
Sure.
And this reward will not be creating a cost for any individual, firm or government.
Sure.
Because it will be paid for through monetary policy and currency trading. The value will be guaranteed by central banks through monetary policy. They will be the buyers of last resort.
Okay.
And they will target a specific price schedule, which is sufficient to manage the risk of climate change.
Oh, that sounds very interesting.
What we're doing is we're pricing a reward, not a tax, and it's based on cost-effectiveness analysis for risk management. So we're leaving behind the concept of social damages and we're looking at risk now. So it's effectively price for each additional ton of carbon dioxide abated or sequestered to get us towards our final objective of staying below 2 degrees or whatever it happens to be with a certain level of confidence. The way the social cost of carbon will be managed in the future is the same way they manage it already. Same approaches, models, but refined and improved. The risk cost of carbon is assessed with a different approach. It simply uses a risk management approach, which means collecting all the data that you have, both quantitative and qualitative. For example, you can bring in experts on every topic, and you can do the assessment with fuzzy logic. You don't need a deterministic model. You basically do a risk assessment.
Okay.
And risk assessments are common, and they're not exact. They're subjective. So a subjective risk assessment will tell us how much more carbon we need to mitigate to achieve our risk objective, and then we simply price the mitigation until we get the result. But the risk cost of carbon, unlike the social cost of carbon, will be reassessed every year. So every year, a body or number of institutions will publish their risk cost of carbon estimates, and they will be collated by the central banks and used for their monetary policy.
Go back. Can you go back to the people getting paid these 4C, so to speak, for their certified mitigation efforts, and then how that works in terms of, you know, they just turn that into money?
If we put ourselves in the shoes of a business owner or CEO of a company, the question for them is, are they going to reduce their carbon emissions or are they going to go out and sequester carbon? And so when they look at their business model and they're considering that action, they're going to look at the economics of it, the finances. So what we're introducing is a reward for every additional ton of carbon they mitigate. And so they can add that to their financial plan. But this price is going to be defined for decades, actually for a whole century. So what that means is the managers of large projects you know, a lot of projects go for 5, 10, 30 years, they can forward plan, and they need to do that because they're going to amortize their projects, they're going to be borrowing money, and they're going to be receiving equity finance. So all of that financial planning has to be backed up by profit somewhere to pay the interest, right?
Right.
And that's where the risk cost of carbon comes in, because not only will they earn that money for every ton, when they receive that money as a reward, they can then hold on to it as an investment, because that money, the 4C, will appreciate in value over many decades.
Right.
So let's talk about the investment side. If you buy the currency, which you can off the open market, it is different to any other currency in the world, because this currency will have a known appreciating value over time, which is effectively a yield. And so this currency will act very much like a sovereign bond, like a green bond, except the yield on it will be quite high. I guess it'll be at least 10% per annum, and it will be more liquid, meaning you'll find it easier to buy and sell it as you desire.
Okay.
And for this reason, the high yield and its liquidity will mean that currency traders and institutional currency traders in particular will buy this currency.
So it's a, it's a currency, and it has a yield. And the yield is going to be increasing because the monetary authority is credible and has promised this is so. Is that is it a known rate of increase, or is it something that depends on the rate of risk mitigation?
It depends on what the assessed risk cost of carbon turns out to be.
Okay.
So that, that will actually map for us into the future the yield on this currency, which acts like a bond.
Okay. And so in some ways, the worse we are at addressing this risk, the more valuable this currency is.
Correct. It becomes a negative feedback on the climate problem.
Right. Okay. That's I think the financial markets will like that. Now, who then is it inflationary somehow, or is it taking money away from some current population, or is there a borrowing that's funding it? Because it has, if it has value, it has to come from somewhere, I think.
Where does the value come from, and what happens with inflation? So the value of this currency actually comes from demand in currency markets that is created through market sentiment. So effectively, when the central banks promise to buy it and promise to make the price rise for decades, they're effectively creating a bull market. In a way, this bull market is not that much different to the bull market in real estate, except the real estate bull market is driven by everybody's desire to get ahead in life and own a house. In this case, it's really more constructed from a purpose of managing the environment. Okay, and there are no assets here. There are no assets, so the central bank must promise to buy the currency. And by doing so, they turn it into an asset.
How are we going to get the world governments to agree on this, given that the world we have today has got dollars and yen and renminbi and so on?
What is needed is a new mandate for the central banks of the G20 nations. Actual fact, a new mandate for all central banks.
Sure.
And this is a mandate to undertake carbon quantitative easing, which means expanding the money supply so that these central banks can buy this currency to underwrite its value. So as the buyers of last resort, they have to be able to create new money as needed to make sure they can buy it and keep the price high. So that answers one of your questions. And politically, how do we get it in place? Well, in actual fact, it's not that difficult, because all we need is one government. It could be the government of Pacific Island nation, an African nation, a European nation that says, okay, we're going to ask our central bank to do a study. We're going to model the policy, and then we're going to run a pilot project.
Okay.
And then as that information is disseminated amongst the world, people will realize it's a good idea. And then some people with the required money will develop the platform.
Okay.
They will build a platform over the internet to do the assessments and issue the currency and interface with central banks. And then there will be a political tipping point where politicians realize that this is a great idea, because it doesn't impose any cost on their government budgets because we're expanding the money supply. Right. And also, as I said before, a lot of the demand will come from private institutional investors anyway.
So the central bank of Tuvalu, so to speak, could get super excited about this, but they don't necessarily have the financial means to put out $1 trillion because that exceeds their economic strength.
Yeah, it's a public policy issue because what is needed is the G20 or even all the world central banks, but at least the main economies of the world, their central banks, to come together around a table and have a Paris 2 meeting. Uh-huh. So it'll be a meeting through the IMF or the UNFCCC or some other institution where they will sit down and negotiate an international agreement to support this new parallel currency.
Okay.
And it will be formally brought into central banks as a monetary policy where they'll trade these trade currencies to keep the price high. But it can start, as I was suggesting, in a way that doesn't have that structure.
Right.
And if it begins without the support of the G20, the currency would just have a very low value. But this is not a bad thing, actually, because what it does is it allows the currency to come into circulation
right.
without coming against political conflict. And then over time, politicians begin to realize that quantitative easing, in this case called carbon quantitative easing, is not evil. You know, it's not going to cause hyperinflation. And in fact, one of the great advantages of national fiat currencies is the ability to expand the money supply when there are serious risky problems such as wars and or climate change.
Yes,
or
no,
financial
absolutely.
Crisis.
Yeah.
Another feature of the policy is that it will create a lot of jobs. A lot of jobs for scientists, engineers, and financial people all around the world. And by rewarding people all around the world for mitigation, it will have a huge positive impact on the livelihoods of people in Africa, Latin America, Asia, who are living on, you know, a few dollars a day. This economy that we will create with the reward will also be decentralized, somewhat like a plant, a very networked, and it will gain this network intelligence. And through the internet, we can share all the information for how to mitigate, and the market will search through that data to figure out how to mitigate at the highest profit margin.
Sure,
and
absolutely.
So this will leverage the global effort quite quickly, and the long-term price signal that we talked about will attract investment money into more research and development, and we'll see a complete transition of the way the world economy responds to the climate crisis. It'll be a phenomenal change. It'll be, I would say, consciousness shifting. ¶¶